Welcome to the Blue Security Podcast, a weekly podcast for information security defenders, where we bring you discussions on best practices, tools, and implementation for enterprise security. Now, here are your hosts for today's show, Andy Jha and Adam Brewer.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Blue Security Podcast. I'm Andy, your host.
Adam, your co-host.
I saw a tweet a few weeks back talking about VMware and the acquisition by Broadcom. And there are some rumors going around that there are going to be some price hikes. And so I thought we'd dedicate some time to talking about VDIs because we haven't talked about it in a while and why they are an important part of security and enterprise architecture. Most companies, they have some sort of VDI infrastructure. And usually they start with servers because there aren't many companies these days that have actual just like physical servers that are dedicated to a single workload. You have like a blade of some sort, and then you virtualize it with a platform. And VMware is one of those platforms. There are other ones. Some still use physical hardware to do the virtualization. Some have gone to the cloud with service providers to do that as well. And then as VDI has become more popular, there have been some organizations that use it for end users as well, for either just single applications or entire desktop replacements. There are a few common options on the market that you might be familiar with. Citrix is very common. AWS Workspaces is like their big VDI solution. And then, of course, with Microsoft, Azure Virtual Desktop or Windows 365, which is still the only SaaS option, the software as a service, whereas the other VDI infrastructures, they're all mostly PaaS, where they offer a platform and you still have to build it yourself. Essentially, it's like the analogy I would use is you're given the Legos, but you have to build it yourself without the instructions, so to speak, unless you know how to do it and you build it the way. But you could build something that absolutely doesn't work, whereas Windows 365 just gives you a working option. So that's still the only SaaS option out there. If you're interested in kind of diving more into it, we did an entire episode dedicated to Windows 365 with a global black belt, Bradley DuPay. It's an excellent episode. I'll link it in the show notes so that you can go back and watch it and listen to it. This episode is really not to kind of dive into the differences between the solutions. I wanted to really talk about the security benefits because VDI is important. And there was a conversation this week among one of the chats that Adam and I are on where we talked about a little bit of the security and compliance of VDI. So some of the benefits, I mean, you're already separating out end user environments from the desktop underlying physical hardware. So you're usually storing data and applications on the centralized server or the cloud infrastructure. So that's already more secure. You have centralized management of baseline images and patches for endpoints. You have the ability to keep sensitive data in the data center rather than the individual end users. Remote access is often a good way to secure your environment. So instead of having to VPN from a physical host, you can deploy a VDI that has access to the internal network without having to provide a VPN solution. I'll take a pause there. Adam, some thoughts.
Absolutely. Tremendous security benefit from this approach. Whenever you're virtualizing applications or an entire desktop, you create that really strong separation between whatever device is being used to access it from the data itself. The data doesn't ever leave the data center. It doesn't roam anywhere. All of those benefits come in the form of security, which is why I think even though initially there were some cost saving benefits and some centralized management benefits, I still think the number one benefit is from a security approach. If you have highly secure applications, this is a really good way to deliver them in a secure manner as opposed to deploying it to remote endpoints that could be on anywhere on any network at this point. And that's an assumption you should build around. So,
So one of the points that we had a conversation around this week was, what is the actual need for compliance of the underlying host? Because some of our colleagues had a question about some customers who wanted to check for compliance of the underlying host. And so do you need to track the OS level, or maybe even like the remote desktop app version? Do you have up-to-date AV signatures, keyloggers, you know, underlying malware of the physical host that you're trying to connect to? And it was really interesting because, as we've kind of discussed, and I think in the security industry, VDI is a fairly solid standard when it comes to providing secure access. So what do you actually need for the underlying host? Does it really matter if you're not really transferring data? You can prevent cut and paste. You can prevent screenshots. I mean, that's all kind of built into a lot of VDI solutions. And you can use MFA to log into the VDI instance. And so there was a conversation around, do we need to, say, require a compliant device and maybe enroll that underlying host in Intune, or is the VDI environment enough? And, you know, that really depends on your risk. And I think for me, it probably isn't a necessary step. I don't really know what you would try to mitigate if you had, you know, a compliant device that you required for the underlying host. I think the one thing that we had a really big discussion around was keyloggers. And I just don't know if that's very common anymore these days. Apparently, Citrix has a way to prevent keyloggers. I don't know how it technically works, but they say that they scramble the keystrokes from the physical device into the VDI environment. Maybe they do, and maybe that protects it from keyloggers. But I don't think that that is a very common thing these days. And if you have protections around the identity, which I think would be the most valuable thing to steal from a keylogger would be like username and password. I think if you have other protections like MFA or compliant device for other applications, then you could mitigate that risk. But what are your thoughts on that, Adam?
I came out pretty strongly in our conversation with our buddies against requiring some of this. I ultimately feel like if you want to do a bunch of compliance checking over the client I'm using to access a remote desktop environment, then you should just give me that too. If you care so much about it, then issue it to me. And ultimately, I think for most organizations, one of the reasons they're looking at these models is to get away from maybe having to provide hardware entirely, to just say, here's your cloud PC, bring your own hardware, whatever you like. And we don't have to do management or anything else on it because we have this really strong separation. So ultimately, I feel like you're losing a lot of the security benefit if you're getting really hardcore about looking at and inspecting that underlying device. And maybe losing the security benefits, the wrong way to describe that, losing the portability aspect of it might be a better way to describe it. You're reducing that benefit because, well, now we're going to set all these requirements on how you access it. Look, if I'm comfortable using my iPad with a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse, and that can connect to my cloud PC, so be it. Like, why do you care all that much? And like you talked about, Andy, you can disable some of the things like cut, copy, and paste and whatever. I agree. Like, keyloggers are obviously the most concerning thing. But if you really unpack what can you even do with a keylogger today, I shouldn't have single-factor authentication. In fact, if I'm doing it right, my users really shouldn't be prompted for passwords much at all. So the keylogger really shouldn't even get a chance to pick that up. And getting one side of the conversation, I mean, there's honestly, if I'm an attacker, probably better or more interesting ways to go about that attack in the first place. And ultimately, like things like blocking cut, copy, and paste or screenshots, pick up a recent smartphone, Android or iOS, and take a picture of something with text on it. You may notice something. They all have built-in AI-powered, ML-powered, whatever it is, OCR, where I can hold up my phone, take a picture of the screen, cut, copy, and paste everything that's on the screen through my phone. So it gets to a point when if a human eye can see it, then a phone can see it too, and unless you're going to pat people down before you let them access it, which, I mean, what are we doing here? That risk is there already at this point because it's slick and seamless to do that. So ultimately, this seems like a lot of maybe perceived risks where if we actually unpack them, we could determine they're not net new risk, or there's risk we can't really mitigate anyway, or there's risk we should mitigate through other ways instead of requiring these controls. So overall, I'm not a fan. I understand there's use cases and scenarios where they make sense, but overall, if you want to do a whole bunch of inspection of the underlying device, then just issue an endpoint instead of doing it this way. The whole point of this is to kind of not care about what the client accessing your virtual desktop is. And so if you start caring a whole lot about that, then maybe this isn't the right model for you.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. And it's really interesting that you bring up the whole phone taking a picture, because, you know, how do you prevent that, right? And so if it really is information that cannot be leaked, right, then it should only be accessed on certain networks physically in a room like a SCIF, where you have to give up your phone before going inside.
Right. Right. If it's to that point, that's your model.
Exactly. And it's really interesting. You had gotten an email recently about a device refresh, and Microsoft, we both work for Microsoft, for those listeners who might not know or are joining in new, Microsoft is now issuing or giving the option to end users when they get a device refresh to instead get a Windows 365 VDI. Mm-hmm. And I was thought that that might be kind of interesting to do and use as a primary day-to-day device. I don't think I could do it in my personal position today, because I require a little bit more control and be able to demonstrate and have demos and whatnot. Maybe, I don't know how you feel about that, Adam, but I think maybe an SSP, or certainly like an account exec, where you're just joining in on a Teams call and doing a lot of emails, maybe some spreadsheets. I don't know. I don't know who would be good for that, but I think it would be interesting to try.
It is interesting to me, because today I'm not using my issued device already. And so instead of getting another piece of hardware that I'm already might not use, maybe I could opt for just having that cloud PC and use it from all my devices. That might be kind of cool. Actually,
and that would give me something to think about. For companies to save some money too, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're not having to buy physical devices and depreciate them over a period of time. You're literally just buying a SaaS model, and that could go into your operational costs, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so the next topic I wanted to talk about, and this is something that's pretty important that everyone should understand if you're in IT, if you're in security, and it's called the shared responsibility model. The reason why I wanted to bring this up was because I had a conversation with a customer this week, and actually one of our people that are in our chat too as well ended up having a conversation very similar to this. And so I thought maybe this idea was going around where they don't really understand what they're responsible for in the shared responsibility model. So what is it? In the simplest terms, it is something that dictates the cloud providers, such as like AWS, Microsoft, Azure, or Google Cloud Platform, a provider like that, where the provider must monitor and respond to security threats related to the cloud itself and its underlying infrastructure. However, the end users, individuals, and companies are responsible for protecting the data and other assets they store in the cloud environment. And it can be misunderstood. And that's how this conversation came about, because the customer thought, okay, well, I'm putting the data in the cloud. And so once it's in the cloud, Microsoft is responsible for it, or AWS is responsible for it, or whoever. And unfortunately, that's not really true in the shared responsibility model. Any applications or data that you're putting in the cloud are protected by the cloud provider as far as the infrastructure goes, like the physical hardware. Like Microsoft's responsible for physical security of the data centers and, you know, any underlying network and all of that. But the data itself, and even the identities that you're using to sign in, like that's all on the individual users or organizations that are using the cloud. And so real quick, there's three main service models. And we talked about one already, which is software as a service. There's infrastructure as a service and platform as a service, or SaaS, IaaS, and PaaS. And SaaS is where the vendor hosts the application and it's used in the cloud by a subscriber. In this model, the provider is responsible for the application security as well as maintenance and management. As is a platform delivery model where things can be purchased and used and run to manage applications. The vendor provides the hardware and software used for application development, and the service provider is responsible for the security of the platform and its underlying infrastructure. And then IaaS is where the vendor provides the whole compute resources, virtualized servers, storage, network over the internet, and the business is responsible for maintaining security of anything they own and install on the cloud infrastructure, such as operating systems, applications, middleware, containers, workload, data, and code. So if you say use Azure for virtualizing servers, like we talked about previously here, you're responsible for the security of those servers, right? Like if you have a public IP address and you have the port RDP open to the internet and you have a default credentials like admin, that's on the corporation, that's on the organization, the business. That is not on Microsoft, it's not on AWS if you're doing that. If you have an S3 bucket in AWS and you have that open to the internet, like that's on the organization. So the data itself, just because you're storing it in the cloud provider, does not mean that it is the responsibility of the cloud provider to protect it. So hopefully that makes sense. Adam, I'll give you a chance to add your own flavor and your thoughts to that.
Well, I'm going to take the thing that our friend of the show, Josh Gingras, always trots out when we discuss this. He has this great image called Pizza as a Service, and maybe we'll find some way to link to this in the show notes, but it essentially describes those different models Andy walked through, SaaS, PaaS, IaaS, and on-premises, and maps them to maybe concepts we're familiar with on different ways to get pizza. So think of on-premises as we're making pizza at home. We're going to make the dough from scratch. We're going to make the sauce from scratch. We're going to cook it in our own oven. We're responsible for everything end to end, short of maybe making the cheese ourselves and growing the tomatoes ourselves. But otherwise, we're doing everything. Next step up would be IaaS. Think of that almost like take and bake, where I can go somewhere, pick up a pizza. They provided me kind of a pre-made pizza with all the ingredients, but I still take it home. I'm still responsible for baking it at the correct temperature for the correct time, cutting it, serving it, providing a table to serve it on, providing dinnerware and cutlery and all those things. Then think of PaaS as pizza delivery. At this point, all you have to provide is the dining room table and the drinks. Like everything else, the pizza shows up at your door, it's cooked, it's ready to go, and that's all you have to do is provide a place to sit and something to drink with it. And then dining out is analogous to your SaaS model, where you literally have to do nothing but sit there. They will bring everything else to you end to end. And so I love this mapping of different pizza consumption methods to these different shared service models. I think it's a great analogy that really lands well. And I think Andy walked through it really well on the different responsibilities there. So in general, as security practitioners, our goal should be to encourage our organizations to minimize their use of IaaS and on-premises as much as possible. Really, you want to see your organization adopt PaaS and SaaS wherever possible, because then you have less responsibility for those things. You have contractual relationships, usually with some sort of SLA or financial penalty if they're not met for delivering those other responsibilities to you. So generally speaking, let's say as a really simple example, you have a development team developing an application, and they say, "Hey, Blue Security Podcast listener, would you rather we stood up our own SQL Server and IaaS and ran it all ourselves, including the responsibility to manage the OS? Or would you rather we use managed SQL in Azure?" The choice every time should be managed SQL if it will work with that application, because now you don't have to patch the underlying application or operating system. The OS is patched automatically. In fact, you have no visibility into it at all. You just have a SQL environment that you can configure to meet your needs. And even there, there's going to be less responsibility for patching and management of the overall SQL service, because that also is going to be managed by Microsoft, as opposed to that would be an application on top of the OS you would have to patch as well in an IaaS environment. So you see how the simplicity grows over time. But in all of those, you're responsible for validating the input, sanitizing input, making sure if someone tries to issue a drop table command, it doesn't get executed, those sorts of things remain your responsibility in terms of the proper configuration and overall application design, even though a lot of that in a PaaS model can be taken care of on your behalf. So definitely something to familiarize yourself with. I think all three cloud vendors have excellent documentation on it. But if you're at all unclear, great time to get clarity on it and understand your responsibilities. Because as an example, in almost every single model, you will have responsibility for accounts and identities and information and data. Regardless of model you choose, you're probably responsible for those. And so make sure you're doing a good job with that.
Yeah, it's really important that you know what you're trying to protect, right? Mm-hmm. You use the example of SQL. Another good example is Exchange, right? If you're running your own Exchange service today, you have to maintain those operating systems, those servers. If the server goes out of date, you're going to have to migrate. You have to maintain redundancy, all of that. Every time there's a server patch or an application patch, in this case, Exchange, you're going to have to do that. When you go to Exchange Online, you literally don't care about any of the underlying operating system or application that's running it. All you have to do is maintain the accounts that are logging in. That's always going to be on the customer or the organization. And you're still responsible for securing the email itself, the data that is there. So very important. And of course, like in most cases too, you're responsible for the physical devices that are accessing that data. So phones, mobile devices, PCs, physical, you know, the physical devices that are accessing your SaaS application. So
right.
Very important to understand this shared responsibility model, especially when it comes to being a defender. If you have any questions, we'll link the documentation in the show notes. So for each of the major three vendors, so that you can go through it. But I would highly recommend that you understand this so that you can defend accordingly, because you might think, okay, well, the data is there. It's on the vendor. It's on Microsoft. It's on AWS. But in reality, it's on you as the organization. So
even like one final note, just real quick before we go, even a good thing to understand would be like the responsibility of backup as an example as well. Generally speaking, in like Microsoft 365, Microsoft does maintain backups of the service, of course, but those are intended to be restoration from major disasters that are service-wide. They are actually and explicitly not accessible to end customers for like one-off backup and recovery requests. So you can't say like, my CEO accidentally deleted this email. Microsoft, can you go pull this tape and recover it? Like, no, that's not included in the service level agreement. Now, we will back it up in case all three data centers that your Exchange mailbox is stored in catch on fire at the same time. We will be able to restore the service and bring it back online. Yes, of course, but it's not for like individual restore requests as an example. So there is some granularity here as well and important to understand too.
Yeah, and the customer that asked me about it was really more concerned about a data breach or data mm-hmm. leak. If their organization was breached, they were asking whether or not that's Microsoft's responsibility for the data because we hold the data. And so I had to try to explain, you're responsible for protecting the data even though it's stored with Microsoft. So if there's a breach, that's still on the organization when it's through the organization, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, again, I mean, and this is where it does get into gray, because if it were some sort of, if it's stored in a SaaS model and there was some sort of network-based attack that was successful, or somebody broke through the hypervisor and the virtualization model and gained cross-tenant access or something, yes, that's Microsoft's responsibility to maintain like network security, physical security, the security of the multi-tenant environment. But then there's also customer responsibility of the identities and those sorts of things too. And if an attacker sends a phishing email and someone at your company responds positively and helps them break in, then that's not Microsoft's responsibility.
Exactly. All right. So take a look at the documentation. This is something that's really important to understand for each one of your services, each one of your solutions. Understand what you're responsible for and what the vendor or the solution is responsible for. That's our show for this week. Thanks for watching and listening. As always, our contact information will be in the show notes if you have any questions or follow-up topics you want us to talk about in the future. Thanks. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to the Blue Security Podcast. Please check out the show notes, catch up on episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Find Andy on Twitter @AJawZero and Adam @AJBrewer. See you at our next episode.